This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at hollywoodblends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is a highly popular, multi-talented international star who's been dazzling audiences for over four decades in film, television, theater, recordings, and concert venues. She received a Golden Globe nomination for her very first performance in a feature film, Golden Girl, followed by Spring Fever, Cannonball Run 2, Lena's Holiday, New Jersey Turnpikes, Playing with Fire, Painter, and many more. On television, she's hosted two variety shows, presenting Susan Anton and Mel and Susan Together, co-starring Mel Tillis, earning her a Photoplay Award nomination in 1979 for Favorite Variety Star, and Time magazine named her one of the most promising faces of 1979. She's appeared in hundreds of TV shows and movies over the years, including The Great American Beauty Contest, The Girl Who Saved the World, Stop Susan Williams, Hotel, Quantum Leap, Baywatch, Law and Order SVU, Family Friends, and many more, not to mention her dozens of appearances on every major award show, variety show, and talk show. On Broadway, she appeared in Hurley Burley and the Will Rogers Follies, and she's also starred on stage in All Shook Up, Hairspray, They're Playing Our Song, and the hilarious comedy, A Couple of White Chicks Sitting Around Talking. And for 7 years, she starred in the great Radio City Music Hall Spectacular with the legendary Rockettes in Las Vegas. As a recording artist, she had a top 10 country hit with her song Killing Time and a gold record for her hit Foxy. She has shared the stage with dozens of legendary entertainers, including Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Tom Jones, Lou Rawls, Placido Domingo, and many more. And she toured with country superstar Kenny Rogers. Our guest is also a successful producer. She and her husband, director Jeff Lester, have a production company, Big Picture Studios, which has brought us some great award-winning films, including The Last Real Cowboys, starring Billy Bob Thornton, and the documentary Speed of Life. And if all of that weren't enough, our guest also hosted a wonderful talk show on Retro TV called Idle Chat, which reunited cast members from classic films, TV shows, and music. She's also been a strong supporter of the She Angels Foundation, which consists of a panel of successful businesswomen who finance and mentor female entrepreneurs to launch their unique ideas into the business world. I am delighted and honored to welcome the incomparable Susan Anton to our show. Susan, thank you so much for being here.
Well, Harvey, what a lovely, lovely introduction. You know, it's funny, when you're around as long as I've been around, you forget most of what you've ever done. And then an introduction like that, I'm going like, oh, I have been a little busy. That's fantastic. And I just want to say, now I get to add to my many, many credits that you so beautifully listed, the Harvey Brownstone Show.
Well, it's my honor. Believe me, I've loved you from the beginning. Now, you first became famous when you won the Miss California Beauty Contest in 1969, and you were the second runner-up in the Miss America Scholarship Pageant. What do you think of beauty pageants today?
Oh, that's a good question. I have to admit, I don't, you know, things have changed so much, and politically correct conversation is something that wasn't around when I was a girl. So it was at the height of women's liberation in 1969, and the Miss America pageant was held in Atlantic City. So there was a lot of protest going on, you know, the women out there, because not thinking that, you know, that a beauty pageant, but as you mentioned, it's a scholarship pageant. And it was one of the few ways that girls could actually get a scholarship other than academic, which is, of course, a great way to do it. But athletically, unlike the men who could get full ride because they were, you know, exceptional athletes. So the Miss America scholarship program was something that a lot of girls were a part of because you had to do talent. And it wasn't just a beauty pageant. So, but today, I don't really know that I support it. But I don't support a lot of things today because our times have changed so much. And I think way too much emphasis is being hoisted on our appearances. And I think a lot of kids are really suffering because of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. When we had Lonnie Anderson and Morgan Fairchild on the show, they said that at times their good looks worked against them because they were being typecast and they weren't always being taken seriously as actresses. Did you ever have that experience, Susan?
Yeah, people not taking me seriously as an actress wasn't something that I really felt so much. But where it really did matter to me more than that was as a singer, because, you know, they'd say, oh, you sing. That's nice. And I was like, no, I really do sing, you know, because I was very proud of being a singer. And the list of people that you mentioned that I worked with was quite a compliment to be booked with them. And as a matter of fact, especially Kenny Rogers, who became a dear, dear friend, and Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr., they were all mentors. So I felt that there was a discrimination of like, oh, you're a pretty girl, can't sing, you know, but so that was something that, you know, would always kind of rub up against me. And I'd say, okay, tell me that after you watch the performance.
Do you think that still applies now in the music industry?
I don't think so. I think, you know, it's interesting, Harvey, you watch... I watch, you know, I'll tell you where it's incredible. I was just watching America's Got Talent or Britain's Got Talent. And it's, I think that there's been so many exceptional people that come out there that don't look like you think they're going to look, you know, that to be a big recording artist. That there was this one guy who was a janitor.
Yes.
You saw that?
Yes.
I saw that. I was crying buckets, you know, a janitor for 35 years, and he's just kind of, you know, very humble. And then he starts singing Don't Stop Believing, and everybody's jaws on the floor. So I think that the way a person looks nowadays is something that has expanded dramatically in the entertainment industry when it comes to live performance and singing. I mean, you look at Jelly Roll, for example, that guy who's large with tattoos all over his face. You know, but people adore him and he's got an incredible voice. So I think that it's not something that is such a big deal in the recording world, but I think it still is a pretty big deal when it comes to being on camera.
Oh, for sure. Now, yeah. In 1978, you and Mel Tillis hosted a summer variety show called Mel and Susan Together, which I actually loved. Whose idea was it to pair you up with Mel Tillis? I thought that was such an odd combo.
I know. Well, you know, it was right when Donnie and Marie Osmond had their very successful variety show. And they had the great bit, I'm a little bit country, I'm a little bit rock and roll. So the Osmonds had the idea of pairing up me with the country star of the time, which was Mel Tillis, who had a huge following. And they produced the show out of their studios in Orem, Utah, where they also did Donnie and Marie. And so that's Donnie and Marie were our guests, guest stars on our first episode. So that's how it came about, working with Mel. And it worked out really well for me down the road when Kenny Rogers became the most successful recording artist that was currently, you know, out there. And I had the country credentials to be able to tour with him.
Yeah, that was a wonderful tour. We had Marie Osmond on the show a few months ago, and she is just the sweetest, nicest person.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, her brother, I don't know the other brothers all that well, but Donnie, I mean, they are the most wonderful people and so talented, and they give so much of their time to, you know, good causes. Donnie lives here in Las Vegas, where we live, and every now and then you'll see him out and about, you know, and he's incredibly friendly with everyone.
Yeah, he's wonderful. Now, in 1985, you were in one of the best TV music specials I've ever seen, Placido Domingo Stepping Out with the Ladies, co-starring you, Patti LaBelle, Marilyn McCoo, Juliette Prowse, Leslie Uggen, Stephanie Powers, so many more. That was a really great show, and I'm so glad I finally got to tell you.
Well, thank you. And you know, what's funny about that too, is there was this up and coming young girl who was kind of like, she played these, did all of the little interstitials between the glamorous women, and that young girl went on to do pretty well, Kathy Lee Gifford.
She sure did. Do you miss variety shows? I mean, you mentioned America's Got Talent. That and Idol and The Voice seem to be today's version of variety shows. But do you miss the old-time variety shows that you used to be on?
I do. I loved those shows. I grew up on those shows, you know, Carol Burnett, or even going further back, I mean, every now and then I'll pull up on YouTube, you know, Dinah Shore or, you know, Perry Como or Andy Williams, all of these great people, because Dean Martin had obviously a bunch of them. And to see the joy that Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and the silliness they would have, or Carol Burnett and doing her Gone with the Wind routine, you know, I love a team of a core actors, like a group, you know, like you get on Broadway, you become such a family. And when you think of Carol Burnett, that family of Harvey and Tim and Vicky and Carol and then the dancers and the wardrobe. I mean, that really launched Bob Mackie, one of the great, you know, dress designers for celebrities ever. Sonny and Cher. Loved Sonny and Cher.
I did too. You appeared in a wonderful TV movie called Jonathan Winters on the Ledge, co-starring not only Jonathan Winters, but many great comics, including Milton Berle, Phyllis Diller, Robin Williams. What was that experience like?
It was so I was not prepared for it because I knew who Jonathan Winters was, but there's no rehearsal, there's no script, you don't really know what you're gonna do. I was incredibly flattered that they invited me to join because I'm not known for being a comic, but I met him and he said, "We're gonna just wing it, and I'm gonna make believe that I'm a little boy that's come into this toy store, and we'll just see what happens." And I'm like, "Okay." And so I'm thinking I need to keep being funny. And he takes it in a whole other direction where he starts to get into the character of this little boy that's more of a deep, meaningful. So it wasn't, he decided not to go for comedy. He decided to go for a deep story about a little boy that didn't feel like he fit in. And so I'm like, oh, pivot. Yeah, pivot right here, because this isn't Jonathan Winters that I see on The Tonight Show. And so we ended up having a really sweet thing, I think, where I found a toy for him or something so he could feel like he had a friend. And it was delightful. And then sometime later, not that long, God bless her, Suzanne Summers was doing a variety special from Germany where she went to entertain the troops. And Jonathan was a part of that. And I was dating Dudley Moore at the time. And so Jonathan and Dudley Moore were just inseparable. They were just hysterical together.
Oh, I'm so glad that you got to stretch yourself like that.
It
And
was incredible.
you weren't afraid to just go with it, just see what happens.
Well, you know, Harvey, it was, I think, one of the times that I le really learned that the most important thing that any actor has to do, or a singer, anybody, most important thing, and you know, because you're a wonderful interviewer, is you
Oh,
have to
thank you.
listen. You have to listen. If you listen, you know, if you don't have an idea of where you're going before you're there, then the present time is where the magic happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in 1988, you starred in one of my favorite episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. It was called Animal Lovers. You played a woman named Diane Lewis who believed her dog was euthanized illegally. Was that one of your favorite TV roles?
Oh my gosh, I had forgotten all about that. I'm going to have to find it. I'm going to have to find it. It was fun, you know, because Alfred Hitchcock was somebody that, as a little girl, obviously the birds and, you know, Vertigo and all of that. I mean, when he would open a movie, everybody would go to the theater. It would be Alfred Hitchcock or a James Bond movie, and everybody went. And so to be in the series was a real delight. I don't remember how did it turn out? Was I right? Did they
Yeah.
inhale? Okay. Well,
Well,
maybe that's
there's always a little twist at the end, but I loved it because you've had a lot of roles where you've shown quite a lot of diversity. You know, and I go back to the typecasting. In those days, there was this image that if you're beautiful, then you're not really taken seriously.
right.
And every time you appeared on one of these shows, we forgot who you are. And we just kind of get into the character and, you know, and then of course you had a recurring role on season three of Baywatch. You played Summer's mother, Jackie Quinn.
I did.
And again, you know, we forget that you're the beautiful Susan Anton. We get so wrapped up into all the neuroses of that character. Did you like that role?
That was so much fun, you know. And I just want to, before I go on with Baywatch, I just want to tip my hat to Farrah Fawcett, because Farrah when she went to Broadway to do The Burning Bed, which was flat out serious, serious drama, she really helped open the door for people to understand that just because you're a pretty girl doesn't mean you don't have the ability or the chops to get into some really dark material. So once again, Farrah kind of opened the door for a lot of us and people that had a, you know, preconception. But Baywatch was just the best job ever. You wake up at 5 a.m, you drive to Malibu, you watch the sun come up, and you're working with these wonderfully talented, beautiful people out on, at, you know, on the beach. And I love the character that they came up with for me. You know, she desperately wants to be a singer and her daughter wants to be a lifeguard. And working with David Hasselhoff was a dream. He's one of the sweetest guys. Have you interviewed David?
Not yet.
Okay, well, you'll enjoy when you do, because you will. He's just so funny, you know, so you're always laughing. And then you go home when the sun sets and you go, and they pay you a nice little paycheck and go, well, that was a good day. So it was great. And I'll tell you, the other thing was really great about Baywatch for me was because at that time I was more mature. So I didn't have to run around in the yellow bathing suit. They left that to Pamela Anderson.
I think that's the first time I saw you playing somebody's mother.
I think it is the first time I got to play her mother. And it was so great to be a mom.
Yeah, that was the time I began to see you as a character actress.
Oh, thank you.
You know, yes. A real character actress, which I love that transition. And I must tell you, Miss Susan Anton, I got to see you and Harvey Fierstein in the Las Vegas production of Hairspray.
You did.
Choreographed by my dear friend, Jerry Mitchell.
He is my dearest friend.
He appeared on our show last year. You played Velma von Tussle. You looked like you were having so much fun on that stage.
I was having too much fun. I was having too much fun every now, because I'm a cut up, you know, and when I'm in the wings, sometimes I might do things to crack up the cast out on stage that if the audience saw, they'd go like, what did she just do? So every now and then I'd have to be, Susan, you have to remember we're putting on a big show here. So behave yourself. So, okay. But what I loved that show so much. I love the message. Love the music. Mark Shaiman, I mean, my goodness, you know, and Jerry's choreography was just brilliant. Working with Harvey and Dick Latessa, the very first theater piece I ever did, they're playing our song, was with Dick Latessa. And it's a two-character piece. And so to be reunited with Dick was also equally wonderful. How do you know Jerry?
Jerry Mitchell was on our show.
Okay.
And we ended up becoming friends. So when I go to New York, we visit, and he's just the most humble. He's like you. He has no idea how talented he is. It's so natural that he just doesn't think it's that big a deal. Yeah. And of course, those are my favorite kind of celebrities. Yeah. And the thing about you, you know, people forget you're also a recording star. I mean, you've recorded a number of albums, Foxy, mm-hmm. Killing Time, One Night, which is your live concert from the Cine Grill in L.A. You have a terrific Christmas album entitled Winter Wonderland.
Thank you.
What do you think about the music business these days?
Oh, boy. I feel like I'm very, very out of touch, I must say. I'm aware of the brilliant artists like Adele, of course. And it's so sad that Celine Dion can't sing right. You know, hopefully that she'll get her voice back because she's one of the most gifted singers ever. So there's always these incredibly talented people that come along. But I have to tell you, Harvey, I really don't know much about the current, you know, landscape of who's doing what. I appreciate that rap is important and that they have a lot of important messaging to say. I'm not a rapper. You know, I'm still very classic rock and roll, Beatles, Tom Petty. You know, I like the classic stuff. And I still, every now and then, my husband and I, we have nights where we like to just put on the music and dance around the house. And he'll put on Sinatra, Live at the Sands. And it's like, that's good stuff.
Well, you know, another one of my friends is Tina Sinatra. She's going to love to hear you say that. She's going to love that.
Yeah, well, Tina's a sweet girl. And I used to play golf at her dad's golf tournament. And one of my great, out in Palm Springs, he and his wife, Barbara, raised so much money for the children's hospitals out there. And when Frank was getting to the place where he wasn't performing live on stage, because normally he would do the show. And I got a call from Barbara inviting me to be one of five singers to sing Frank's songs. And so I was the only girl, and I will never forget, because there's Frank Sinatra, who I had the pleasure of working with several times, but I hadn't seen him in a long time, and I certainly have never sung to him. And I was introduced, I came out on stage. There was the big orchestra playing away, and I started singing. What was I starting to sing? I'm gonna love you like nobody's loved you, come rain or come shine. And I froze, and I looked straight at him, and I said, I made the orchestra stop, and I said, and the room is filled with, movie stars from everywhere. And the room is, and I said, I have to stop. I can't believe this kid from Yucaipa, California is standing on this stage singing to Frank Sinatra. And the whole audience of who's who started clapping, going like, yeah, I get it. You just never know where your life is going to take you. And then we got back into the song and finished it. And Frank gave me a standing ovation, and he couldn't have been sweeter. But that's a memory I really treasure of Mr. Sinatra.
There must have been other times in your career where you were starstruck. Look at the people you've worked with.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you who really, really got me, and I wasn't prepared for it. Many years ago, you probably remember, there was an event in New York City called Night of 100 Stars.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and so I had been invited with, they had all the men, they did a fashion show, and then the women did a fashion show, and there was just everybody participated. And so I had been in rehearsal at Radio City with all the women for the fashion show. And I was dating Dudley Moore at the time, and I was on a break. And so I went to the elevator to go look for Dudley. The doors open, and standing there looking at me with those piercing blue eyes was Paul Newman. And I literally lost my breath. I was like, oh. And I got in the elevator and I turned around, gave him the back of my head, and I hear his sweet voice. He goes, hello, Susan. I go, I can't look at you. I can't look at you. I'm too nervous. And after years went by, anyway, we became friends because my friend Danny Sullivan used to drive race cars for Paul. And so I would go to the races, and Paul would sit next to me and tell me, explain to me what was going on. But I was floored. There was, because I thought, oh, what's the big deal? Blue eyes, big deal. Because all the women, Elizabeth Taylor, everybody's saying, have you seen him? Have you seen him? I go, come on, he's just a guy. And then those elevator doors parted, and there he was. I said, he was magical.
What an experience. You've never written a memoir. I wonder if you ever will.
I don't know. When I get engaged in conversations like this, I start to think, oh, maybe that's something, people can say, you should write all of this down. And I go, yeah, but then I forget about it. And I stay so present in today that I don't stop to think about all the stuff that happened. But it probably would be, even if I just did it for myself, just to remember that, no, because sometimes I think we forget that we've actually accomplished something. We're kind of tend, I think we tend to be a little hard on ourselves.
I'm so glad you said that because that's why I work so hard on my introductions. I want my guests to remember what they've done, what they've achieved, their body of work. And I ask you about the memoir because you actually do care about the past. You had a great talk show on Retro TV called Idle Chats. I loved it. You reunited the cast of E.T., Happy Days, Leave It to Beaver, Knots Landing, Love Boat, Lost in Space. See, I really am a fan, Susan.
You are a fan.
You brought back the Pointer Sisters. It was terrific. Why didn't the show keep going?
I don't know what happened to that. Everybody had great hopes for that. And I never did get the answer as to why they didn't continue with it. It's hard to know these days, with streaming and all of the other platforms that are out there to cultivate an audience. I don't know how many people watch Retro TV. We did do a lot of press, as much as we could, to make people aware of it. But for me, it was a thrill, especially because of, the Pointer Sisters, there's only one left now. So I was able to be with both of them. And then also sweet Tony Dow from Leave It to Beaver, Wally, passed away. And so he was absolute doll. And you know, you probably already know this, but he was a brilliant sculptor. Brilliant. His work is beautiful. So, you know, and then Gavin McLeod, of course, passed away. So I was really, really happy that I had the chance to work with these people. And they were just darling, the stories they had to share.
Well, you know, you were actually producing part of the historical record. That's it wasn't just entertainment.
Right.
And I think now I'm starting to think that you and I could be the Donnie and Marie of the talk show world, because I'm starting to think, because you were on every single talk show ever.
Yeah,
times. You actually know how to interview. You really are a good listener, and you know how a talk show should work.
Well, that's a high compliment. Thank you. I've always felt comfortable in that arena. I love getting to know people. I like to learn things that I don't know. And I'll tell you who was really, when it comes to the talk show world, there were two major mentors of mine. One was Dinah Shore, who was the most charming woman anybody could have ever met. And because she made you feel right at home, like you were sitting in her living room. And the other one was Merv Griffin. Oh, Merv. Merv is so responsible for the success that I've been able to enjoy, because he was a fan, and he had me on his show almost every other week. And you know, and that's where Fred Silverman saw me, who was the president of ABC at the time. And he signed me to a deal with ABC. And then when Mr. Silverman went over to NBC, he signed me to a deal over there. And that was because of this wonderful exposure, this platform that Merv Griffin gave me over and over and over again.
You know why he did that, Susan? I can tell you. Because you project beauty, talent, and likability. I remember as a young teenager watching Merv Griffin, I was addicted, that he's the reason I wanted to do this. And you would come on that show and you made people feel like they were your friends.
Oh, thank you.
You know, you sometimes a superbly beautiful person. I talked about this with Morgan Fairchild. Sometimes if you're super, super beautiful, people assume you're a bitch.
Right.
I'm just going to say it because it's true. And she's the one that said it. And she was often cast as a bitch.
Right, right.
But you made everybody feel like you were the sister we always wanted. And I think Merv was very clever to have you on the show. And there's another thing I want to tell you. One of the things that has always really impressed me about you, Miss Susan Anton, as a person, is that you've always been very gracious and dignified, even when your personal life was constantly in the tabloids. They were always writing about your relationships with Dudley Moore and Sylvester Stallone. And I remember, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I saw Joan Rivers take a few shots at you. In fact, I think I saw you on her talk show and she publicly apologized.
She did.
How did you cope with being under a microscope for all those years?
You know, it wasn't always easy. It wasn't always easy, but I realized also that the trade, I loved what I was doing. I loved the business. And when you choose to be a part of this business, which is very high profile, if you're lucky enough anyway, and then you date somebody who's exceedingly, you know, famous, they're going to write stuff. And unfortunately, and even today, it's really gotten very rampant in our country, in our world, where if you're in that world, then you sell more things by being negative and mean and mean-spirited. So I would do my best to never take it seriously, to, you know, kind of build a thick skin, because I knew in my heart, I knew who I was and I knew the truth and I knew what was going on. The biggest concern I would have from time to time would be it would hurt my mom and dad, you know, because we lived in this little town. And my dad was had been a deputy sheriff and very respected, but a tiny town. And so everybody knew everybody, you know, like, oh, Susan this, and I read that Susan that. And there were times that it was really hard for my sweet mom and dad. And I tried to protect them as best I could from it and say, if I knew something was coming out, I'd call them and say, just want to prepare you. It's not true. You know, they're just making stuff up. Gird your loin.
Well, that's another reason to write a memoir, because there was a lot of stuff that wasn't true. I just, you know, I watched you handle that apology. And And it's not often Joan Rivers ever did apologize. And I just thought you had such class. You were so gracious about it. Everybody fell in love with you all over again. And I don't know whether you ever, do you feel the popularity that you have? Do you get that people really, really love you?
You're so sweet. You know, it's funny, Harvey, because this past weekend, and I'm sure you know about these, they're called the Hollywood shows, where all of these celebrities come and you sit at a table with, you know, photographs and stuff like that. And people pay to get in, and then they pay to have an autograph or they pay to have a selfie taken. And I'm like, well, okay, I'll give it a shot. And so many people come. And the main thing that I touched my heart so much were the people that said, you know, you just were in my living room all the time and I loved you so much. Or one guy was talking about that his childhood was really difficult, but then when he would see me on TV, he felt better. And it was like, okay, that's the only thing that really matters, is that people felt seen and heard and loved and laughed a little bit along the way. I'm like, that's the reward. That's the success.
It absolutely is. I'm very surprised as an interviewer how many celebrities don't really remember that they do have a huge fan base, that people really love them. We talked about it with Steve Guttenberg the other day, and it just I'm glad I get to tell you that. And of course, another really special thing about you, you've been a strong ambassador for the She Angels Foundation, which supports and empowers women in a whole variety of endeavors. Tell us why that organization is so important to you.
Well, my dear, dear friend, Catherine Curry Williams, she and her husband many years ago had a boy that didn't live long. He died with a rare disease about, I think, 9 days after he was born. And they decided, what can we do to celebrate Shane? And they realized that had Shane grown up, he would never have the ability to go to a playground and play with the other kids because the equipment didn't exist for children with special needs. So they started Shane's Inspiration, and now these parks are absolutely everywhere around the world. And Catherine decided, you know, she's always involved with fundraising and whose needs are being met and not met. And she said, there are so many women out there who are not getting funded because the corporation still to this day still predominantly goes to the men. And so she started this foundation with our other friend, Catherine Gray, who's got a great documentary coming out that Sharon Gless produced about the She Angels Foundation. And so we started this organization so that we could raise awareness and funds for these women. They come together and they present their ideas a little bit. It's a little bit like Shark Tank, but for women. And there's a panel of highly successful women who have done very, very well. And they come out, the contestants, if you will, with their ideas, and they pitch it, and they have their business plan and the whole thing. And then the panel decides on the three they want to fund to get started. And so far, the ones that have been funded have gone on to do very, very well. And so now we also fund nonprofits that are helping young women and girls and our gay community too, because they're highly disenfranchised when it comes to raising the money that, you know, so it's ridiculous. And so the community is a community of love, support, kindness, and encouragement. And I'm just really proud to be on the board of directors.
I think it's an amazing legacy. It really represents what an ambassador for Hollywood is all about. Are you happy? Are you at a place in your life where you really found serenity? I mean, I know you have a wonderful husband. You've got a beautiful dog that I got to see. Are you happy with your life and with the career you've had?
I'm really happy. You know what, Harvey? It's an interesting thing because I don't work that much anymore. After COVID, right before I was getting ready to go on tour with a show, and then COVID came and I was home for a couple of years, and I realized I'm ready to be home. I'm really ready to be home. I want to just really enjoy my house. I don't want to be on the road anymore. I don't want to be in airports. I don't want to be in hotel rooms.
Does that mean you don't want to co-host any talk shows anymore?
No, that doesn't mean that at all. That doesn't mean that even a little bit. But, you know, but very aware that if something comes my way, I have to really go like, yeah, that's I would love to do that. And so what's happened over the last few years then is that I've been able to kind of reintroduce myself to myself. That's not the celebrity Susan, but just the Susan that walks her dog and picks up his poop and, you know, washes the dishes and like, what's for dinner, honey? What can I make you? And I have such serenity is the perfect word. I am so content. And I'm also at that place in my life and my journey where people that I love desperately and have been so important to me, I've now passed away, including my baby sister, which is just, you know, gut-wrenching. But when you realize that we're only here, we really are only here for we don't know how long, but it does come to a point where you're not here. And so every moment of every day for me is an absolute gift to be here. I thank you for being interested. It's such a joy to be talking with you and making another new friend. So serenity, joy, and I meditate. I meditate every day. I've been meditating for years. It's been life-changing for me. Meditating, journaling, and then walking. I walk out on the golf course every morning for 5-6 miles. And so I start my day off with just great peace, gratitude, and just, and I'm a woman of great faith. And so I just have to trust that the greater one above us, whoever anybody believes in, for me, it's God, is going to, when it looks like everything's falling apart around us, because if you look at the news, it's like, I don't know, but I'm going to trust that the big guy's got it. We have to do our part, but let's, best thing we can do is to walk around with being kind to one another. Can we all just be kind?
Amen to that. Amen. Yeah. Well, I want to express my condolences on the loss of your sister.
Thank you.
I want to tell you that what you've expressed to me today is that you didn't lose your identity. You knew the difference between Susan Anton, the star, and Susan, the person, the wife, the sister, the friend. And I just think that that is the recipe for being grounded and centered and humble and in the moment. And I know you don't give a lot of interviews. I've got to tell you, Susan, it's been such an honor and a pleasure meeting you, having this chance to talk with you about your amazing life and career, making a little pitch for a co-host, and and absolutely telling you that you are welcome on our show anytime.
Thank you so much, Harvey. Well, you're a doll, and I'm so delighted. Thank you for being such a supporter, and let's keep that talk show idea in mind, okay? I'm in.
Absolutely. Our guest has been the wonderful Susan Anton. For more information about Miss Anton and to check out her merchandise and see everything that's happening, please go to her official website, susananton.com. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thanks for joining us. See you next time. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my managers, Rick Marcelli and Robin Bragg Marcelli at the Marcelli Company in Hollywood, my director of programming, Robert Monaghan, my PR directors, Eileen Shapiro and Jimmy Starr, and my entire team at the XPTV One Network in the UK.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.